Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
From the glow of St. Paul's number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee. Let's find the place where the loons call out among the moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines. Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country. Now here's Bjorn Lloydsted, and I'm Fudd Klugman with another woodland escape.
Well, welcome back to Cabin Country. I'm Fudd Klugman.
And I am Bjorn Lloydsted.
Earlier this summer, Bjorn and I took a couple of trips visiting folks. We packed our masks and kept our distance as we interviewed a couple of favorites.
Right.
And the first one this summer was in Piers, Minnesota.
Correct, yes.
And it's none other than Thielen Meats.
Yes. A real piece of my history, Fudd, Cabin Country trips, you know, headed up through kind of the countryside of Highway 25,
right
through Foley and Gilman and Buckman and then Genola and Piers. And Piers was always kind of a welcome sight to us because it was every weekend for, you know, basically a decade plus, 70s into the early 80s. And my folks kept going, obviously, after I did, but Piers was always a stop. I mean, we talked on one episode about road food and favorite restaurants of various family members. And for my dad, Piers was very special because there was a cafe he absolutely loved. I think I've mentioned the Main Street Cafe.
Right.
Piers,
right.
Minnesota. And then it was just across the street and over to Thielen's Meats. And it was a weekend event for me. And it's funny because on more recent trips we've made to the Gull River, your dad's place or your cousin's shack, the great bass fishing tournament, and enjoying the riverside and, you know, making the campfires and all that good stuff, we've stopped from time to time, largely at my arm twisting of you, Fudd, let's go through Piers because I gotta check out, you know, Thielen's Meats again and get some sausage and some bacon. My wife grew up spending a lot of time in Piers, as her grandparents and her father actually were from Piers, and Thielen's Meat was a very, very popular stop for everybody in town and the surrounding communities. And I'd get an order, right? I mean, I still do. I mean, there's a trip coming up here end of the fall. Let's get back to the Gull River, and I've already got an order from my wife for Thielen Meats, specifically bacon and hot dogs.
And how many pounds are you ordered to get?
This time I'm getting 10 pounds of bacon.
10 pounds.
I think at some point she may reach for 20. And I don't know if there's a cooler that size at this point. But
well, you know, it's just that good.
It is. It is that good. It's
thick,
crazy.
Thick cut bacon.
And fresh from their smokehouse.
Mouth-watering.
And the hot dogs are amazing.
Smoothly delicious.
Country sausage. I mean, anything they're making is just good, and I think I've made a convert out of you, Fudd.
Oh, yeah. Well, after interviewing Joe Thielen, which we'll let you hear in just a moment.
Right.
I bought too small a portion of their smoked, or their beef jerky, and oh my God, was it good.
Yeah.
I think we ate half the bag on the way back to the cabin.
Yes, we did.
And I think I saved just enough to share with my daughter, who seems to like jerky, so. And in fact, earlier on our last trip with the family, we stopped by on a Sunday.
Uh-oh.
And they were closed.
Yeah, never on a Sunday.
That was disappointing. Anyways, I'm looking forward to getting more jerky.
Yeah, just a week or so away coming up here. And honestly, and this kind of leads into some of the interview FUD. I could not stop myself a few years back. Very cool black baseball cap with the Thielen logo on the top in red stitching. Thielen Meats, Piers, Minnesota. Now that has become a constant piece of my apparel when we go out in the field to do interviews, or we just head up to the cabin. We go out into the cabin country and enjoy some fishing time, some campfire time. I always have my Thielen's hat on, and it never fails.
Yeah.
Someone always comments on the hat. Oh my gosh, Thielen's. Yeah, wow, how great is that? Don't you wish it was closer to the Twin Cities? And I would say, no, I don't, because I'd go bankrupt. Or part B, you know, it's part of the trip for me. I mean, it's just... We're almost to the cabin in this, you know, back in the day, our cabin, now modern era, you know, going to your dad's place.
Mm-hmm.
To get to Piers for me is like, we're back to what I remember, you know,
yeah.
Really outstanding bacon, really outstanding sausage products. And so I wear that hat. I get comments on it all the time.
Right.
And then, like I said, meeting my wife, I mean, I was meeting this young lady and eventually we're married, and lo and behold, you know, she knows the town so well, spent so many years with her grandparents summering in Piers. She was born in Little Falls. So it's a well-known commodity. I mean, everybody knows Thielen's Meat. And it was just kind of cool. So you'll hear me in this interview with Joe. The Thielen company was great enough to respond to our request. I'll reference that hat several times. Like, well, I'm wearing the hat, you know, and I always get these comments, and I keep forgetting you can't see me. So, what hat? You got a fedora on, a fez, a beanie? What do you, you know? No, it's a Thielen Meats hat, and I wear it with pride. I wear it with pride because it is part of my childhood growing up, you know, making that stop every weekend. So, it was very cool that they agreed to let us come in finally, and I could sit down and see the back workings of a place I've known since I was probably 7 years old, you know?
Right.
And I'm glad to see they're still doing well and that the family's very invested in this. It shows no signs of slowing down. They're just full steam ahead. And we got the opportunity to sit down with Joe Thielen, who is one of the kids of the original Thielens that we'll find out through the interview. It's been around since about the 1920s. But the meat market proper really kicked into gear about the 1960s, and it was 10 years later or so that I started making my...
So it was new and up and coming when you were passing
through. Right, yeah, it was the brand new full-length, you know, store-length meat case, and just the smell. You walk in and that smell of the smokehouse. And
boy, I'm getting hungry right
now. Oh, I know, it's ridiculous.
I need some beef jerky.
Without a doubt. Somewhere there's bacon cooking, and nothing says cabin country like that type of thing, so... Perhaps we quit gabbing about it and get on with our interview with Joe Thielen from Thielen Meats. Should we add to FUD that we were kind of trying to figure out our three microphone situation? So FUD will chime in from time to time with a question.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be a little hard to hear.
A little out of reach of the microphone, so
just a little bit. FUD was doing more the field engineer piece, and basically it's either a good thing or a bad thing.
I was doing Don's job.
Yes, Don. Where were you, Don?
Well,
you know,
I've been...
for Pete's sake, we needed you. Where were you?
He was ordering meat at the counter.
He was probably, sussing out the various flavors of beef jerky, getting his fill. But, you'll hear a lot of me. So I trust that won't make you switch away now. But without further ado, we sit down in Piers, Minnesota with Joe Thielen. When did this all start? I mean, when did this... kick off, I guess you could say.
The original building is located right next door. That started in 1922.
Okay.
And that would have been my great-grandpa built that, but it wasn't so much a meat market. I did have, you know, some meat stuff in it, but it was a general store, really.
Sure, okay.
And even at that time, they did things like they bought eggs and they butchered cows, chickens, so basically all-around general store. And I think it was my grandpa then that finally saw that's kind of probably what's going to... What needs to keep going out of a general store, I guess, or he thought that was the part he wanted to keep going. So in the 60s, he built, for the most part, what we have today. We've added on a little bit, but for the most part, the retail area is what he built in the 60s.
Okay, so the 60s is when that kicked in, because we started driving through in the 70s, early 70s.
Yeah,
and it was here, so
that made a huge difference for him because what he was selling out of was a little tiny case in the back room of a store.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden he's got this huge showroom that with a meat case that's 10 times longer than what it was. So I mean, it was just.
I remember my father-in-law used to talk about whatever night of the week it was here in Piers where you guys were doing like certain meats would come out fresh,
mm-hmm.
and everybody in town would come rolling in. So that was kind of cool. Remind me now, Joe, what night of the week was. What would he say? Hot bologna night was a big deal.
In fact, that still goes on today.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, today's Wednesday, so today it is in Genola.
Got it.
Tomorrow it'll be in Piers. There's two different bars that serve it, and it comes hot out of the smokehouse around lunchtime.
Yeah.
So we got to come in a little bit early to get it started.
Sure.
And then about lunchtime, we bring it down there, and they'll get bakery buns and horseradish. And so you're right; it does drop kind of pretty good.
Right. Color, yeah. Right. Genola and Groover's doesn't exist anymore, does it?
No, that's been probably 15 years or so, I think, since they sold it out of their family, and then the next owners didn't really do much with it.
I just remember the signs being thing was such a kick driving up here. Whoa, you missed Groover's. My folks always like, what's Groover? That's Groover's. And we'd stop, and they loved it because they had all the candy in bulk and all that kind of fun.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The sponge candy and things. I haven't seen this. They grew up in farm country, Kensington and Glenwood, so way out west. But, so it's been here for a good long time, started out of a general store kind of affair. That's pretty cool. Would you say that the spotlight offerings are like the bacon and the sausage?
Yeah, for sure. Anything that we make homemade that's smoked, you know, it's our smokehouses, I think, that people are coming for. So anything that we process through that is definitely the main reason people stop. But, of course, you know, over the years we've added quite a bit to that lineup too, but that's the meat of it.
Well, I knew you guys, at one point, I think it was in the 1990s, I heard Oprah Winfrey talking about Thielen's Meats on national television. I thought, my God, I know where that is.
That's pretty cool.
Did that have any kind of an effect that you were getting celebrity status by that point?
Well, if it is what I'm thinking of, probably it was in around 02, I want to say, which isn't far off. We were mentioned in an article in the New York Times and here in central Minnesota, I knew that article was coming out, but I'm like, who cares? You know, that's the New York Times. Was that? I mean, I didn't know one, never seen one, never read one. But when that came out that day, one of the life-changing moments for myself. It was just, the phone didn't quit ringing. We had two phone lines.
Sure.
For 3 weeks straight, the phone literally did not quit ringing.
It'd be kind of a pleasant surprise.
Well, it was a lot all at once because we did not see that coming.
Right, and I suppose your workload then triples, quadruples because...
Luckily, at that time, my two brothers and myself didn't have kids yet at that time.
Okay.
And my mom and dad were a little younger, so they were helping too. And it was a good thing that it was that timing because right now there's no way that we could really
keep up with that kind of craziness.
With the family, you just can't work the way we're doing it. So.
I hear you. I hear you loud and clear. I love the fact on the website, you talked a little bit about processing. Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. Boy, my brain was just fried there for a minute, Fud. Is it predominantly deer is what you're seeing coming in?
Working with local hunters? That's the majority of it. But believe it or not, you know, as far away as we are from elk or moose country, we still cut up some of that, you know.
Okay.
And a few black bear. But for the most part, deer, you know, especially the last few years, is pretty healthy deer herd in Minnesota. So,
right.
Sometimes we'll cut up the whole deer, actually skin it out, debone it, cut it. And other times people just bring in the stuff they've already done and have us make sausage out of it.
Okay. All right. I mean, is it the kind of deal, too, like the moose? I imagine that's coming in from like the northern part of the state or southern Canada, maybe?
Either Canada or some of the western countries, I don't know, or western states like in the country, maybe.
Like northern Montana or Idaho, places like that, I suppose. Yeah, I know moose are kind of hard to find. In the boundary waters, a fair piece. And you don't even see them all that frequently in the boundary waters.
Is that right? I haven't been up there in a long time, but
they're challenging to find. Turkeys. Do you ever see turkey hunters bring them in?
Yeah, we smoke. You know, obviously, just in the springtime, but we smoke. And then another thing that actually turns out the best, I think, is jerky.
Okay.
So we'll take the breasts and slice that up. And
that's a good sized piece of meat. So
some of them can get pretty big.
Turkeys are so incredibly smart. If you're a turkey hunter and you're new at it, it may be a while before you actually get one, but I was thinking that might be a thing.
They're a lot smarter than what you give them credit for, that's for sure. And somehow or another, it seems like in the off season, they let their guard down a little bit. Somehow they know that they're not being chased.
Yeah.
And then they're allowed to get a little bit closer.
You can't shoot me, so I'm just going to walk through your yard.
Yeah, you see that. Then wait till the season opens up, and boy, they get very wise very, very quick. So.
Right. Thinking about how times have changed. So you kind of opened up as a meat market proper in the 60s. Times changing. Are there products you don't offer anymore that you did back in the 60s? Are there things that were not maybe quite as popular now that were back then? Or have you added things because there's been a call for it?
Well, I guess as long as I've been here, I don't remember us dropping too many products. It's one thing that kind of keeps us going is the fact there's a lot of older people that realize there's few places you can get some of these things like red cheese, Braunschweiger.
Sure.
You don't just go to the grocery store and get that. So liver sausage, blood sausage.
Right.
So it might seem a little out of date that we're still making that, but you know, people will drive a long ways for it because you can't find it everywhere.
It's a specialty. I mean, you guys make it and they know it and you make it well, so they're going to keep coming here. Anything new you've added to the line?
Oh, we've added quite a bit. When I started here, there was probably, you know, maybe a dozen sausage products or maybe 15 sausage products that we made, and maybe even a few more than that.
Sure.
And we still make those. We've decided we're not, of course, going to change anything with the original recipes, but we've added a whole bunch of other stuff. You know, nowadays a lot of people, they'll have a sausage, but some want a cheese in it, or jalapenos, or wild rice.
Okay.
And we've added things like marinated chicken, marinated pork chops.
Mm-hmm.
So just a lot more specialty items. People want to try a variety more so.
Take them from here and they're already ready to go in the kitchen as soon as they get home.
Yep.
How do you respond then, Joe, to some of these places you hear on the radio where they're talking about the blueberry brat?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that could work, you know, or chicken, apple, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, as a rule of thumb, I generally try to make things that are kind of appealing to me. And of the many varieties of sausage we have, for the most part, we'll do things like add cheese or add wild rice or we do some beer brats.
Sure.
I don't get very much into the artificial stuff like taco seasoned brats.
You know,
we're using artificial or pizza flavored brats.
Right.
I don't really believe in that, or gummy bear, you know, that sort of thing. I like to add just, you know, natural ingredients to it that are can change the flavor a little
absolutely.
Bit.
Growing up, did you think you were going to be in the
business? Did you see this becoming kind of something you're going to be doing, or were you going to be an astronaut?
Not when I was younger. NFL, I didn't really think I was going to do this, but then I did try a year of college, and then I had a couple other things that I was doing throughout high school and a little bit after, but within a year of graduating high school, I was back here full time.
Sure.
Because that's when I think I grew up enough to realize what I had here.
Right.
And just decided, I never looked back from there either. Yeah. And, you know, once I came back here full time, I fell in love with it. And I didn't really want to do anything else. So,
is there a time of year where you get a little more time to relax some and business maybe gets a little more normal? I'm imagining for you guys seasonally, summer is a crazy time.
Yeah, summer, and then that going into fall is busy too.
Sure,
but so the usually about coming up. Hunters and then Christmas, but usually January, February, March.
Okay,
winter months.
It's time to get your breath back and
We see some snowmobilers go through, but they're not big with shopping for meat. You know, a lot of times they'll go trail riding and they're not interested.
They're looking for a restaurant, not a meat market.
Exactly. You know, so that gives us a little time to get caught up.
Better yet, a bar restaurant. Kill two birds with one stone.
That would be the best.
Right.
Do you get to hunt it all yourself? Do you do that? Or?
As much as I can. You know, a lot of years it just amounts to hunting around home. We've got a little bit of land that we hunt around here, and that's always nice because if I can sneak out a little bit early from work, I can be out in my deer stand and, you know, in a half hour after I leave here. So that we always do. And then occasionally, you know, we'll get out of state once in a while and do some hunting for something rather. So either elk or whatever comes up.
Right. And you said you have done some processing of, have you ever had elk come rolling in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do probably a dozen or so a year.
Okay.
That come from
Colorado. Animal.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
Well, and maybe you can correct me on this one, Joe, because I've been corrected many times by many brighter people than myself. I had a buddy who swore that he liked to elk hunt and loved the taste. And I've eaten. Fudd, have you eaten elk?
No.
I had it out in Colorado. It's delicious. Unbelievable. But he said, oh yeah, there's every elk has two, they're not teeth so much as tusks, and they're actually ivory. They're not And so that's for real.
Yep, that's
just
for real.
Pulling that's the wool over my eyes.
No, yeah. If I any of them that I've ever been that we've gotten when I'm on a hunting trip, we'll harvest those out and keep them as a souvenir.
Sure.
Yeah, they're pretty. They're not real big. They're maybe big as around as a dime or something like that.
Right. I love the fact that I wear this hat, or we just talk about the podcast, and we're going to talk to the Thielens about the meat market, and people know what we're talking about. They immediately know. If they're from Minnesota, they know what we're talking about. So that's extremely cool. And I love the fact that it was you were willing to come back and keep rolling with this. Because I can't imagine. It's like, hey, you got this wonderful business that just keeps getting stronger. But I got to go out and see what else there is. And then, you know what? We're going to keep rolling with that.
Well, hopefully some of either my kids or my brother's kids will do that too. Because we're fourth generation now. And to get to fifth generation... is pretty rare, sooner or later, all good things can come to an end. But right now we've got seven kids that are that are in school now that have a chance of coming up here and having an opportunity.
Outstanding.
It,
so. What colleges are they?
They're all about the same age, and I think the oldest one is 14.
Okay.
And the youngest one is 8, so between 8 and 14. So we got a few years to...
Sure, think about all that.
Yeah.
They're going to the peers schools here.
Yep, all of them go to peers. A couple of our, couple of their moms are teachers at school there.
Okay,
so.
Yeah. I, like I say, driving through this town for so many years, I thought it was just Main Street. For us, for my family, it was two stops: the Main Street Cafe.
Yeah.
Maybe the gas station, depending on whether we had to hurry up and get out of town, and Dad didn't have time to gas up. Main Street Cafe, and then Thielens. And then strap yourselves in, because that 25 miles to Brainerd is the single longest stretch of road on planet Earth, And I just remembered, that's pretty much Piers. And then getting to know a family that grew up here, you realize this town is actually much bigger than you see from just the main drag coming through.
Well, it's got some pretty nice amenities, having a nice little golf course down there and a campground, that's always nice. We kind of grew up down and around that area with the swimming area. And river to fish in.
Exactly.
A lot of opportunities for recreation.
Pictures of my father-in-law hoisting Northerns out of that little river. So, I remember that back in the day, kind of a two-for-one package, Ginola and Piers. And that all of a sudden it went from there's guys, we'd drive through town, there'd be guys pitching horseshoes right on the edge of Ginola. And then within 10 years, there was this big arena, and then they were having state horseshoe pitching tournaments, and then it was this big event and bands and all this. I was like, oh my goodness. And then driving through the last few years, it's like that's all kind of faded again a little bit, going back to normal a little bit. But
well, you've got a pretty good memory. That's a pretty good description, I think, of how it
I
went.
Just remember I was seeing the name Primus Burger on some things, and all of a sudden there was a Primus Burger arena. And there was Gruber's, and I was like, we're gonna stop in Gruber's. I don't know, it's getting a little too big for us at this point. Let's just keep going. We got to get to Piers.
If you go back towards Brainerd again, what used to be the Primus Burger Arena down in Ginola, if you go for, there's that Barrett Pet Food up there. Building, the original building there, is the old Primus Burger Arena.
Took it apart and moved it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is now standing up there.
Maybe they've got a horseshoe pit for the workers on the way. take a break off the meat grinder and go pitch some shoes. Oh, that is super cool. Well, Joe, thank you so much for some time here. We wanted to get to know what the story was here behind something that, like I said, I've grown up my whole life. You guys, it was for us, it was always bacon and hot dogs, bacon and hot dogs, bacon and hot dogs.
Yep.
And then I meet my wife, and it turns out she's from this area and spending summers with her grandparents and peers, and you're missing the whole hot bologna thing. And don't forget about, it's like, oh, okay. So it was just cool that I was like, man, there's more to this. There's a lot more to this. And then start doing a little research, and minor celebrity in the family, I understand, with a chef, and he's got a book series and TV show and the whole bit. And
she's done a couple of really good cookbooks. I think she got her second James Beard Award a couple of years ago. So that's pretty incredible.
It was a Michelin star chef in New York City, if I'm not mistaken, for a while. Yeah. I'm a bit of a food geek. So I was like, hey, I saw that name and I thought, is that the same tie-in with the family? And then she actually referenced this meat market on her show on PBS. So I was like, well, I guess that answered that question, right?
Yeah, that's there her first cousin, so.
That's cool, because she had a specific episode where she said, in honor of my family's meat market, tonight we're doing hot bologna. And so, and it even showed, you know, the people sitting around and making sandwiches and sitting in the kitchen and shooting the bull. And I was like, wow, that is, so it definitely is the real deal. We'd just like to thank Joe Thielen from Thielen Meat Market for giving us the inside scoop on an iconic Minnesota legend, I guess I would say, because so many people know it so well, and I get so many questions and comments. So thanks much for all your time.
All right.
We'll let you get back to work.
Okay, well, thank you guys.
Absolutely.
That was nice.
That was super cool.
Well, and there he was. It was great to hear, you know, just about the history of it. And we sat in his office, which I think was his dad's office. He had all kinds of paraphernalia.
Yeah, cool. Hunting trophies
that stay at the house. But the biggest
and bestest of the hunting trophies were at home with dad's house. But
right.
But these were here too, and some really interesting, you know, mule deer, Arctic fox, caribou for PC.
Yeah.
You know, all this cool
and
stuff.
And the trophy knife stuck in the ceiling.
Right.
When you wear out a knife, it's
10 to 15
you
years.
You whip it up in the ceiling.
Yeah. Meat cutting, it gets retired and into the office. And I would say Joe is a succinct individual, you know.
Well, yeah.
He was up front of like, well, I can answer your questions.
He was probably like, you're making my life flash before my eyes here, Bjorn, because you know the history better than I do. And
well, you know, I am a history guy, and Piers to me is very interesting. I've spent a lot of time there, especially after getting married to a Piers lifer family.
Yeah.
So, it was a great opportunity, and I was really glad he could take time out of his very busy day. I mean, there was a lot going on while we were there.
Yeah.
Business was booming.
Right.
And Joe gave us a good half hour to sit down and just, you know, ask those questions we've always, I've always wanted to ask. And I think you were like, yeah, this is a good thing to hear about, because I'm so used to the mouth-watering jerky in various flavors. And by the time I get home, there's a piece left for my kids.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Barely.
Oh, no. But hey, the good news is they'll make more, you know?
They will. And you can order online, can't you?
I believe you can. Yeah. I think they've got a website that is definitely set up and attuned to the distance order. So, and Joe was even referencing at one point how that New York Times article, you know, all of a sudden their online business was just going crazy, and they were trying to, you know.
You know, we should have warned Joe ourselves that, well, after all our listeners in cabin country.
Hey, to those of you that have stayed with us, we love it. Thank you
so much.
And please tell 18 of your best friends and all their relatives to start listening to Cabin Country, because we may send them a coffee mug at some point. And sadly, you'll have to order your own jerky. That stuff's worth its weight in gold. And I'd love to suggest maybe people hearing this would add to the Thielen business.
You won't be disappointed.
Business plan. Yeah, you will not be disappointed.
So that way you can chew on some jerky or fry up some bacon, drink some coffee, and listen to the Cabin Country podcast.
That's right. Think back to that great interview with Joe, and anytime you're on Highway 25 or cutting across from some of the other highways, man, make a stop. Make a stop, because you'll be glad you did.
Excellent. Well, we're going to take a short break, but we will come back with even more entertainment from Cabin Country. Waves, water, sun, the sound of a cast and a lure hitting the surface, the weight, the excitement. Many an angler ups the ante, the scent that will drive fish wild. Angler Deep Blue, the elixir that will guarantee strikes and ensure you catch your limit. Angler Deep Blue, the attractant that creates a frenzy in the depths. The proper mix of gizzard shad, fermented crab, herring, garlic, anise, and parsnip. Dip your bait in Angler Deep Blue and then send out your lure. Whether bobber fishing or trolling, Angler Deep Blue sends out a calling card to walleye, pike, bass, and crappie saying, "The bait you want is over here." Why waste your time on leeches, minnows, or rubber worms? Strike now while the scent is in the water. Angler Deep Blue is the attractant that draws the limit to your live well and makes competition fishing almost seem boring. Angler Deep Blue is the only attractant for lures and live baits that also works well as a summer season cologne. For those with an itinerary that includes the club after a day's fishing, Angler Deep Blue is your best last spritz before leaving the car and heading for the dance floor. The addition of patchouli oil, bergamot, and cedarwood create a lingering aroma that will have many nightclubbers asking, "What is that scent?"
Good evening, sir. Can I have a look at your ID?
Absolutely, my good man.
All right. Enjoy your evening. Have a great time. Oh.
Angler Deep Blue. Have you got it on you?
And now, Real Adventures of the CCOA, the Cabin Country Outdoors Agents, featuring Officer Bill Torgi Torgerson on his tireless efforts to maintain law and order in the unpredictable wilds of cabin country. Tonight's episode, Jack the Ripper, Part 1.
It was Friday night in cabin country. I'd been out for the better part of the day trying to settle a dispute over the shooting of the local woodchuck population. They were back. They were digging under foundations again. Cabin owners' dogs were going nuts. Small kids were talking about how cute they were. This one was a head-scratcher with no easy out. It was the evening right after the golden hour. I could take off the agent's hat and go back to being myself. I was at the Sportsman's Cafe enjoying my 23rd cup of coffee at the end of a long day when my cell buzzed. I looked toward my phone with a mixture of exhaustion and duty. At this time of day, I had a strong suspicion of what I'd see. I was right. A 266. Live box destruction. The cabin owner suspected a large snapping turtle. Given the original construction of his live box, this would have to be a giant snapping turtle. A bead of sweat formed on my brow. This had to be Jack. Now, for those new to the story, Jack the Ripper, as he was locally called, was no ordinary snapper. This turtle was simply the largest reptile the Gull Lake, Gull River area had seen in decades. Complaints about Jack were nothing new. He was a repeat offender whose career spanned decades. Various Lake Place owners around the area had complained about the brute. These complaints had come in over the course of years. Anglers complained about Jack, but maybe complained was too mild a word. They feared this armored giant. There wasn't a live box Jack couldn't shred. It didn't matter if the live box was bolted to the deep water section of a dock or inshoreward near the shallows. Pressure-treated lumber, composite board, hard plastic, even aluminum. Jack destroyed live boxes as if they were made of children's Lincoln Logs. Jack was efficient. Any cabin guest or owner who puts the day's catch on a stringer to be cleaned later would return to the dock to find skeletons, floating fins, and a clear lake bed beneath where the carnage had occurred. Local waterfront owners were well aware that the well-constructed live box was no better against the Ripper. An angler would basically need a diver's shark cage to keep this snapper away from their catch. What puzzled everyone around the Chain of Lakes area was the sheer longevity of this cold-blooded killer. Tales of Jack were well established in anglers' childhoods. Mothers, fathers, great uncles were talking about the behemoth turtle that could destroy any live well ever built.
You'd better just clean those fish now. When you come back later to get them, you'll be finding a grisly scene, I assure you.
I put a new piece of gum in my mouth, paid for my coffee, and donned the hat. The agency pickup fired with a roar, and I headed out towards the highway that would take me to the fire road that flanked the gull. I'll admit my mind started running through the scenarios that locals would have to face when it came to the Ripper. Putting in the dock in the spring could be an eerie event. Cold, clear, largely weed-free water synced up with the time of year when reptiles and amphibians came out of their winter slumbers. When you donned the waders and grabbed a ratchet wrench, Jack was out there. Many a dock owner along the gull was known to take a break with a high-speed slog as a perceived shadow passed near them while tightening dock bolts in the water. Dockside swimming required vigilance. Sunbathers floating on air mattresses were taking a distinct risk. Working on your outboard motor in the water could be dangerous, to say nothing of the kids floating in their inner tubes. Over the years, Jack had created several situations involving each of these scenarios. But his real target was the day's or evening's catch, as it awaited cleaning, swimming in a live box. I tipped my hat forward into business mode as I turned onto Edie Road, a maintained dirt road with driveways marked by fire numbers and homemade signs. The truck slid for a moment as I hit the gas along the road cut. This was sandy country amidst the oaks and maples. The rain created piles of loose sand that made driving somewhat tricky, not to mention pulling a trailered boat. The sand did make deer tracking easier, but that was another story for a calmer evening.
Be sure to join Officer Torgi Torgerson in the next exciting episode of Real Adventures of the CCOA, right here on Cabin Country.
This program is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either products of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously. Any similarity to actual events, locations, or persons living or dead is entirely coincidental.
Well, there we are, the part one of Real Adventures of the Minnesota Outdoors Agents, part one. We'll make sure to keep steady with those now, and we got to see what happens with with Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper.
Those snapping turtles. I think I did mention that my dad saw one this summer off the dock on the Gull River that was just the biggest one he ever saw. Maybe that was Jack. I'm not sure.
Did he give us a size report, Fudd?
He made a huge circle bear hug symbol with his arms, like,
absolutely,
the thing was this huge. I couldn't believe it. And yeah, it's the girls and myself haven't really been in the water much lately. Not after just that tale, but each year the weed thickness in the water is a little different, and
absolutely.
And my oldest girl isn't really afraid of. She's a good swimmer. And she wasn't afraid of just kind of swimming out in the channel there. And I was trying to keep positive, and that's great, as I'm looking around, looking for shadows in the water. Okay, why don't you come back in now?
Something drawing a wake heading towards you.
Want to try some fishing now?
Come on back in. Get some plastic baits we should try. You need to get out of the water.
Radio, or maybe have to get that giant treble hook with the rotten hot dogs.
Rotten wiener.
We'll see.
That's right.
But since our last recording, we headed up for our annual fall trip.
Indeed.
Buck Fielding could not make it,
Couldn't make it.
And a lot of it had to do with the pandemic everybody's aware of these days. And
that's right.
Wanting to be extra safe.
One of the kids didn't feel all that well. He stepped out wisely.
Yes, indeed. Turned out to be Not an issue, but that's, better safe than sorry.
Absolutely.
But it was a good time. We had excellent weather. In fact, we posted the little short video of riding that last tracker boat ride on the river.
Absolutely.
And it was just beautiful. Of course, it was past prime. Yeah,
But we got right up by the edge of the dam.
Didn't
venture into the stay back area.
Yeah,
we got as close as we could get, and
I like to closely monitor my, the Lowrance depth finder, fish finder kind of thing. And I didn't really realize that close to the dam there is really the deepest part.
Yeah.
At a whopping 26.
26 feet.
26 feet.
My goodness.
And I'm going to segue into something else here, Bjorn. We were just talking before the show here that yesterday was an important anniversary, wasn't it?
It was, for a fact. It was the 45th anniversary of the loss of the SS Edmund Fitzgerald.
Should we cue one more time?
the homage to Gordon Lightfoot, and obviously the sad reality that all 29 went down with the Edmund Fitzgerald on the 10th of November. 1975, and I got to be honest, Fudd, every time I think about that, I don't know if it's just a Minnesota thing, or a Great Lakes thing, or what it is, but boy, you can't mention the name of that vessel, and you get kind of wistful, and at the same time, a little spooked.
I mean,
the whole idea, and Gord said it so well, when the gales of November come slashing. I probably just messed that up. My apologies to Mr. Lightfoot, but I can't imagine. I mean, I was hearing a little bit on the internet about what made up the Edmund Fitzgerald and the hatchways.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might have my numbers wrong here. I think they said there was 27 hatchways going down the length of that vessel, and all of them weighing tons and just huge, big metal doors, very thick, very strong. And they talked about the clasps that kept these hatches in place, these giant screws. And, you really would have your work cut out for you to try to do any damage to these things. And it always brings me back again to Lightfoot. I forget the line exactly, but talks about a certain time of the night where the main hatchway caved in.
Wow.
And, a respect for the power of that water. I mean, yeah. I've always had a love for Lake Superior and a definite respect for it as well. And mm-hmm. in 1975, I wasn't very old. We were both relatively young men. Yeah. And just thinking about something that size, you know, referred to at one point as the Queen of the Lakes. It was the biggest ore hauler out there and, you know, built to survive everything. And, man, November 10th, 1975, kicked up a storm that could collapse a hatchway that, you know, could handle just about anything else. And but not that
not the
volume of water.
Lashing and, gales of...
My goodness. Yeah.
November.
Just unbelievable. And then that, of course, leads me back to talking with Todd Matthews, and, you know, the Minnesota Diving School.
Right.
And talking about, have you ever thought about going down? I don't remember if Todd spoke about it or not, but I was talking at one point with an accompaniment. Nice. Yeah. The gales of November are doing something to my brain, here, but I'm not quite sure. Where are we? Who am I? I mean, but this individual was a diver and was keen on deep water dives and putting on the borderline spacesuit and going down right. into these very deep waters where, you know, a dry suit isn't going to cut it. I mean, the water pressure is too great. And, you know, that was a goal. It's like, oh, yeah, we've got the gear rented in a time spot where we're going to go down to the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Wow.
So that doesn't scare you at all? I mean, it doesn't freak you out? And, you know, it's cold and deep and dark and...
Yeah.
There lies the ship and Lord knows, you know, what you're going to find. And
yeah.
Oh, no. Sounds wonderful. I can't wait to do it. Really looking forward to it. And, I mean, you go on the internet and you see past dives and people inside, you know, the chart house of the Edmund Fitzgerald, and oh boy, I don't know that to me, you know, water's so dark you're not sure which way is up.
Well, all you have to do is listen to the Cuyuna Lakes episode
right.
where we listen right. to Todd Matthews, and he just does an excellent job of taking away any fear you might have.
Right.
It's
right.
like his job to say, you know, it's a beautiful, great experience.
You should check it out.
Yeah. On our show, we put lots of scary music behind it. And I think you said you saw some other diving videos. And there's like banjo music or
right.
something like that.
Happy guitar music. And
yeah.
And here come the schools of Northern Pike and crystal clear water, the Cuyuna Mines, and...
Nope, Bjorn and I like
oh,
to
boy.
Pipe yeah. in all the scary, good Lord, you're going to die down there.
Who knows what you're going to find in these murky depths. Well, they're not murky, for one thing.
Yeah.
Secondly, but I know, having spoken to a couple people that have done Great Lakes dives, that's not the case in the Great Lakes. It's hard to see.
Mm.
And the deeper you get and the colder that water gets, you know, it's dark. And, mm-hmm. and thick, and somebody was talking at one point on a PBS show I was watching about Great Lake shipwrecks and trying to get down to like about 100 and some feet at one point in Lake Erie, and just how the water is almost, you can't see a thing. I mean, you got the lights on, you got
yeah
everything, and it's just there's so much movement down there,
yeah,
and underwater currents, and you know. You got the cameras running, and all of a sudden, out of this murk comes this shadow of this giant vessel on the floor. And and the closer you get, the you know, now you're starting to read the name of the ship on the
right.
bow, all this kind of stuff. But just the dark, dark water, and all this particulate matter just kind of moving through the currents. And all I can think is, I hope Todd enjoys himself.
And, tell us about it.
Tell us about it.
We'll listen.
Yeah,
with rapt attention, but. Won't be strapping on the tanks.
So I'm assuming yesterday that the bells at the Mariners Museum, and I believe that's in Michigan.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But yeah, I know that bell sounds 29 times for each sailor lost.
Okay.
Edmund Fitzgerald and made contact with Bjorn Jr., who's always been a rapt student of that.
Mm-hmm.
And loves the song, you know, and they sing it at camp. And I sent him a picture of the ship and said, a one-line text in quotations. It said, "Does anyone know where the love of God goes?" And within minutes, you know, when the waves turn the minutes to hours, it's like, "Yep, today's the day." Well, I hope you're lighting a candle or something, you know.
Yeah.
We pay our respects. Yesterday was the day. I mean, like I said, I still remember being a kid and seeing that on the news and being like, "What? What are they talking about?" One of the last ships, you know, that was still on the lake, and it didn't make it. You know, it's gone. And it was shortly thereafter that I think Mr. Lightfoot cranked out that ballad that haunts us all. Although they did say yesterday, it was interesting to see the Arthur Anderson, which was closest to the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oh.
You know, they were trying to, like, get a beat on each other's lights and, you know, follow us. You know, and I think they even said, you know, the last report, you know, over the radio from the captain of the Fitzgerald was, we are holding our own.
Mm.
And shortly thereafter, you know, the captain of the Anderson lost sight of the lights and it just kind of disappeared. It was gone.
Yeah.
And that ship came into Duluth Harbor yesterday, apparently, in the teeth of a snowstorm.
Oh, wow. You know, probably much milder compared to...
Well, I'm going to guess compared to the gale that took it down in 1975, but they said there was the closest known vessel that was still plying a trade on the lakes, and here it is coming into Duluth in the middle of a snowstorm.
Wow.
You know?
That must have been powerful.
Yeah, sitting there in Canal Park, you know, eating a hamburger, watching, here comes the Arthur Anderson, you know, I'm glad to see it made it back.
Wow.
Wow, man. 45 years ago today, they managed to make it back to port, but had to report that they had lost all contact with the Edmund Fitzgerald, and as had the world, so...
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Well, our hats off and
hats
homage
off indeed. Well, we
do. Memory.
We do have the outside chance at some point we might get Captain Dave Stricker. He's a fan of the show, and I think he would be interested in adding his 10 cents worth. He's a guy who likes to sail in sailboats. Lake Superior, the surroundings of Lake Superior, and he told me last time I saw him we were headed to the mighty Minnesota Commercial Fishing Museum, of which he's a proud board member, and we were going up there to do a little work, and he was telling me, regaling me with tales of doing his captain's test bad weather crossing. They set it up such that you're going to go out at a time when the conditions are not ideal.
Okay.
And the idea is you make it across to the other side of the lake, and what he ran into wasn't, you know, 20-foot swells or anything, but he was going across in a dead calm, full fog.
Wow.
That means pea super. If you think back to the interview we had, I guess we didn't have it. We were given an interview with a
Helmer
Great
Ockvik.
Lakes fisherman. Yeah, Helmer Ockvik. And he talked about how November hits and the lake, she smokes, you know.
Yeah.
It's straight up, high as you can see up into the sky. The lake is smoking. You can't see your hand in front of your face. And he said, yeah, we went across the lake. You know,
wow.
no wind, had the diesel engine running and going across, cutting across the shipping lanes in a wall of fog that went on forever. And he said, boy, you watched your radar so close, listen to that radio so close. Because all I could think was, at what point do we hear a foghorn? And there's a, you know, 50-foot prow coming at us.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Said,
thankfully, that didn't happen. They made it across. You know, maybe at some point he'll be able to tell the tale himself here.
Yeah, that'd be
great. I think
he'd
enjoy it, and I'll make that offer to the good captain at some point here. But, yeah, he said there's a lot of different conditions. He said mine was pea soup. You know, get across the lake in a pea soup, make it across, and you'll have passed your test.
Wow.
Combo platter. Pea soup and about a 20-foot swell. Now that would be, maybe they wouldn't allow for that. I don't know, but
I don't know.
You don't want to add your name to that long list of vessels that vanished on Gitche-Gumee.
I'm kind of I have this funny vision of people with clipboards on the other side of the lake waiting for you.
Yeah,
and if you don't make it, well, I guess you failed. I mean, what,
it's a, we'll send out the Coast Guard, and you didn't pass.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's a rudder, you know.
I'm sorry. Better luck next time.
Next time, time, time.
Oh, boy.
You consider yourself the luckiest man. Yeah, no, oofta, wow. Mm. I tell you what, I'll stick with the tracker.
Yeah, oh my gosh, the tracker on, like I said, deepest part is 26 feet.
Well, you know, we could still put her down in 26 feet, but I'd like to think that day will never happen, Fudd.
Yeah.
They will never occur.
I'm sure not.
If there's a 5-foot swell on the gull, we might
put
another log in the fire ring and
start
another pot of coffee.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
It'd be much more comfy that way.
You can have it. That's right. But we do have a few pieces, parts coming our way in upcoming episodes, Fudd, that maybe we should inform our listenership of here.
As we mentioned, we did a couple of months now, midsummer, warm summer day. We headed south to close to the Iowa border to Spring Grove Soda Company.
Spring Grove Soda.
And that's in the queue. We've interviewed the, what was his name, Bob? Can't remember. Sorry, I have to look that up.
It's been a while. We're a little slow on the uptake.
Yes.
Cold air outside. But,
got distracted.
No, talked to the owner and brewmaster himself and got a great interview and how things got rolling and the early days of making sodas in drugstores, if I recall, and
how
all of a sudden it really caught fire and people loved the flavors and it just kind of grew from there and we can find it all over the place. Spring Grove is a well-loved tipple here in the Cabin Country vicinities, and he gave us a great interview. We're looking forward to sharing that with you soon. We also have upcoming musical giant John Munson.
Munson,
member of many a band, has had people following acts around the upper Midwest, Trip Shakespeare, Pleasure, Semisonic, The New Standards, most currently the Munson Hicks Party Supply. A lot of fun there. It was good. It's just, I was lucky enough to be invited along on a outdoor show a couple weeks ago, and there was the band playing in a park in St. Anthony Park. Yeah, it was cold. They were wearing their fingerless gloves and drinking hot tea and wired into the nearby house that invited them, and they put on a great show and a huge, lengthy curriculum vitae of musical achievements, public radio achievements from great musician John Munson himself. And of course, this is Cabin Country, so we will certainly be talking with John about the great outdoors.
That's right.
There might be people say, tell us about life with Trip Shakespeare on the road and the great acts you opened for. And I, frankly, am more interested in, where do you like to camp, John?
Well, you've crossed paths with him many times.
We have talked a little outdoorsmanship, indeed, and he's a man who enjoys the great state of Minnesota, so we're going to get his take on the North Star State, where he likes to go, and, everything from your favorite park to what's the one campsite meal the Munson family likes to sit down on, but I don't want to show our hand completely here, Fudd. Save some of that for the interview. And then we'd kind of toyed possibly with maybe less from Fudd and Bjorn and perhaps a little more from the listeners themselves.
That's right.
Speak to that a bit, Fudd.
We should remind you that you can reach out to us at cabincountrypod@gmail.com. Send us an email, and if you want to say, hey, how about talking about this, or if you have a story yourself you want
to
share and
your experiences in Cabin Country, we'd love to make it part of the show.
Also, if you're you're maybe not residing presently in the Minnesota part of Cabin Country, where you are now and what your memories of growing up in Minnesota might
be
could be anything, but join us on the dock here.
We've seen from the analytics, we've got some listeners in places like Australia.
Right.
Norway.
And I'm just curious.
Parts of the Middle East.
Are these displaced Minnesota people, or?
It's hard to say.
Did somebody think, here I'm in Australia, and I just want to tune into this Minnesota Midwestern show about, camping, or?
Let me tell you about Cabin Country
in
Queensland, Australia. Wadi Rum, Jordan. We'd love to hear the tales. And I think, Fudd, am I overstepping my bounds if I say you can email us the tale? We'd be glad to read it.
Yeah.
Aloud on the show, but at the same time, if you're keen on digital files and you've got the ability to record yourself telling the story, we'll be glad to add a little background sound for you, but share it right here on the show. So, you know.
Yes, and
give you a plug, and here's
a plug and a mug.
That's right. If you send us a Cabin Country story from wherever you're at,
yeah,
there's still some of our fine Welsh crockery.
Yes,
with the Cabin Country logo on the front, and we'd be thrilled to send you a.
I've been enjoying coffee and mine for 2 years
goodness
now.
Goodness gracious, tell me about it.
Many cycles into the dishwasher, you know,
without a doubt. So they come out clean as a whistle and as good as new. So
I think mine has a tiny chip on the front, but that gives it more character.
That's right. It's like now, it's like the prop of your tracker. It wasn't truly christened until there was the first dent.
That's right. You're then doing what you're supposed to, is what my cousin Doug would say.
Legit. You've christened the boat properly.
And I've been drinking lots of coffee from my Cabin Country mug.
Dangerous levels.
So
dangerous levels of coffee.
So there you go.
Without a doubt. But that's all
ahead?
In the works, yes.
In the works.
And I mean, I'm not going to lie, I love the sound of my own voice, but quite frankly, we'd love to add your voice to Cabin Country as well. So that opportunity awaits you. And run that web address past us one more time.
The email address is cabincountrypod@gmail.com.
That's right.
And, you know, I do check it often.
A digital story or a print version that we could read aloud.
Or if you want to get crazy and tell us what you like or what you'd like to hear more of from the show.
That's true. Yeah, we are.
Do you like to hear us gabbing away? Or do you like it when we interview, you know, naturalists like Stan Tekella and authors like Mike Lean?
Right.
And, looking forward to musician John Munson.
Without a doubt. He's been gracious enough to agree to join us, and hopefully that's coming up real soon. So.
Righty-o. Well.
Without a doubt.
I suppose we can let the cabin door shut one more time, and we'll...
One more time. The sound of the screen door closing, and we'll see you in the next episode of Cabin Country.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.